time for Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. We are mere days away from the start of the 2023 Milwaukee Brewers season. I've been saying March 31st on these podcasts. It's March 30th. It's Thursday. It's a day sooner, and I believed it was March 31st. I've been planning for Friday. No, it's Thursday at Wrigley Field, where the Brewers will face the Chicago Cubs. They got a couple more days in the Arizona sun, and on the other line, he also has a couple more days in the Arizona sun. Some rude awakening weather waiting for him on the way home. That is Kurt Hoag, my colleague at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is again in Phoenix, checking out the Brewers, making note of all these roster changes, writing a ton at jsonline.com. We've got a lot to discuss as we get closer and closer to this opening day, Kurt. A lot has happened in the last 2 weeks since we last podcast, but the major action has been really in the last couple days here involving Luke Voit. We're going to talk about him. We're going to talk about some of the young kids who look more and more likely to have opening day roster spots. Adrian Hauser getting hurt. Gus Barland is on my agenda today. We're going to start, though, with Keston Hira. That news is a couple days old by now. The Brewers informing everyone that Keston Hira will not have a spot on the opening day roster. He is out of options. This effectively ends his tenure with the Milwaukee Brewers. Kurt, I don't think there is any way you could have convinced any soul in 2019 when Keston Hira was a rookie that they would just let him leave when his options ran out, that would be the ultimate fate of where Keston Hira's career took him. I don't know how you summarize it. To me, it's one of the more enigmatic situations in Brewers history. I mean, like, Bill Travers comes to mind back in the early 70s as a guy who sort of fell off the map as quickly as he got onto the map. So give me your thoughts on Keston Hira. I think we kind of felt like he wasn't going to make this team, but it's still kind of surprising now that we've gotten to this point.
Yeah, it reached the point where the conclusion, I think, was, I don't want to say obvious. I think we talked last time I was on here about how it was going to be a difficult decision either way. And it was, in the end, was most difficult just because of the history there and the people involved. You know, these parties have known each other, and, you know, this is the only team here is known for, but this is what is going to be a seventh year as a pro. And so it's difficult. You know, he's the guy that was the highest rated prospect since what, Ryan Braun in the organization. Orlando Arcia might have been higher by some places, but like Baseball Prospectus had this guy as the number six prospect in baseball in 2017. No one could have seen it coming in 2019. I don't think anyone could have seen it coming in 2020 when he struggled much more that year, but there was still enough there. He led the team in homers. There was still enough there, and, you know, coming off that 2019 season where you can kind of also write off the COVID year as well, where you can kind of say, okay, this, you know, that's the anomaly in it. It did not turn out just to be that case. I mean, even last year when he had some really hot stretches, you know, you look at the overall numbers, 115 WRC plus, pretty good. But at the end of the day, the strikeouts were just too much. The lack of being able to play anywhere on defense was too much. So kind of with the way the roster was shaping out, and, you know, these young guys that they're looking to give chances to, and also Luke Voit being in the picture, it was just destined for this, unless he won the job in spring, which his performance most definitely was not at that level.
Yeah, I was going to mention that the spring. I mean, I would have to think that if the Brewers didn't think he could be on this roster, they would have found a suitor for him at some point last season when he was striking out a lot, like you said, but still hitting the ball well, you know, mashing when he was making contact. They, I'm guessing, at the start of spring thought, well, it's looking maybe a little bleaker than it has in past years, but we'll see. And then Sibley was not able to show that, you know, to show that he deserved a spot on this roster, and just really a gut punch. I mean, you know, I don't think the COVID year ultimately changes the course of history as much as maybe we think it would, but you go into 2020, it's the Yelich and Hira show, and it has been a journey for both of those guys since that season, since that weird abbreviated season, and you just wonder kind of what went wrong. And I think we'll always be wondering what went wrong in Keston Hira's case. If he, you know, if it's some bit of coaching that altered his swing in the minor leagues that took him from being an elite contact hitter to being a guy who, you know, is one of the biggest swing and miss guys in all of Major League Baseball, that's not an exaggeration. Or if, you know, and you've talked to him a little bit, you know, he kind of bristles against that idea and thinks it was just him, you know, like he was the one who made these adjustments that ended up, you know, really kind of torpedoing what he was able to do. I, you know, like, I don't even know. Maybe they, I don't even know what they do now with him. Like, do they just let him walk? Do they find an opening for him in some sort of low level trade? Like, I don't even know what's left on the table when they're obviously moving on, what they can do. But I don't know. Like, is there a way to sort of summarize the career, the Brewers career obituary of Keston Hira at this point? Like, do you suspect there was something that went wrong in the development process? Or do you think he was just maybe, you know, playing over his head? I don't even know how to describe it, Kurt.
No, I think, and I trust me, I've done some looking into this, what happened here. And a part of the conundrum is no one's really sure, not even Keston Hira himself. Obviously the swing changed and it's different. And the whole profile changed, you know, going from a guy with a 70 hit tool whose contact was lauded as a prospect and in college as well. So, it's just baseball. It's a tough game. Hitting is really hard. You know, like, it's not, we often talk about how it's not linear. It's not a linear sport, you know, in the other direction, you know, in terms of how guys like Mike Brasso can be undrafted senior signs out of Oakland University, and turn out to be pretty good big leaguers who hit series winning homers off Aroldis Chapman in the playoffs. Like, development happens in different times and different ways. And I don't want to say that like development stopped for, you know, Keston Hira or whatnot, but unfortunately, you know, for him and the Brewers, it seems to be a little bit of the reverse where they just could not quite figure it out. And maybe some team will figure it out with him. You know, maybe he'll go somewhere that where there's an opportunity or just a change of scenery, or because he might not be that far off from being really good again. I mean, we saw it at lengthy stretches last year as well. So, yeah, I think you try to find, you try to do right by the player and find him a good trade spot, you know, not somewhere where he's going to be, you know, like on a 70 win team and not even have a starting job. Somewhere that will be positive for him, whether that's, you know, a team that's not so good where he can play every day, or, you know, a good organization. But primarily a spot where he can play is the key here.
Yeah. I said Bill Travers earlier. That was incorrect. I meant to say Bill Parsons, who is a
Brewer. How could you?
Yes. 1971, Milwaukee Brewers had a rookie pitcher named Bill Parsons. He only went 13-17, but he finished second in the American League Rookie of the Year voting. Now, he was nowhere near Chris Chambliss of the Yankees. That guy ran away with it, but Parsons had a 3.20 ERA. He made 35 starts that year. Quality, I mean, obviously this is back when pitchers were throwing that amount, 244 innings. It wasn't a huge strikeout guy, but he definitely, you know, he was good. And then something just happened. He wasn't hurt or anything. He just kind of fell off a cliff. He was just a little bit worse the next year. He had a 3.91 ERA, then a 6.79 the year after that. And then he's with Oakland in 74 and out of baseball. Like, he played four games and just disappeared. He went from second in the Rookie of the Year voting to out of baseball in just a couple years' time. I mean, you know, it was probably a weaker rookie class, but still, like, that's what I was thinking of when I was thinking of Keston Hira. Like, his career is going to be longer than Bill Parsons, but it's just amazing. It's really, really stunning. I mean, you really thought he was going to be a cornerstone for their offense for years to come. And now here we are. Now, Hira not making the team, especially when coupled with the other news that Tyler Naquin, who was brought in, interesting arc for Tyler Naquin, brought in as a right fielder. It looked like he was kind of a long shot to make the team. And then it looked like he was kind of a certainty to make the team when Tyrone Taylor left with an injury. The Brewers were just, they just didn't have enough outfielders to make this team. And then he was told, along with Keston Hira, that he would not be making the team out of camp. And that seemed to make it pretty clear that Luke Voit would have a spot on this roster. And at the same time, Luke Voit kind of just went missing a little bit. He was not with the team. He was still part of the organization, but he wasn't on the travel roster or anything in the final couple games before spring training. So you've written a lot about this, on what the situation
so
is. What is
so
going
much.
On? What is going on with Luke Voit, my friend? Tell me. I know you wrote about this at jsonline.com, but give us the cliff notes on what is happening here.
I was just going to say, here's what you do if you want to find out. You go to jsonline.com and click on the Brewers tab. But no, I tried my best to summarize everything that we know about this situation into one compact and concise article. I think, personally, there's a world within the world of opt-outs that I was not entirely familiar with. And so we're kind of all figuring out on the go. But the short of it is that Luke Voit on Friday opted out of his deal with the Brewers. That was when the opt-out date that – well, the second opt-out date, they pushed it back from where it previously was. So that's when it was. And so it's a bit of a procedural move. You know, basically it's him saying, I want to be – add me to the active roster or release me is essentially – how it goes. And then the Brewers have 48 or 72 or whatever, you know, the specific wording in the contract, I don't know, but it's in that general range to honor that request and add him to the roster or basically release him from his contract. And there's no further obligation from either side. Now within that 48 to 72 hours, because he has opted out of his contract, basically in most cases, I believe that makes his current contract void, like it's essentially ripped up. It's not valid anymore because it's a minor league deal. It allows him to negotiate with other teams during this time. So his agent's talking to other teams. You would assume the Phillies are one. Talking to the Brewers. So obviously the Brewers have interest in him. Otherwise they wouldn't have, you know, they wouldn't have signed him coming into this camp and kept him around. And like Tyler Naquin's been told he hasn't made the team. Luke Voit, that didn't happen, even though they're both on non-roster deals. So the end of it, we don't know how it's going to end, but it will end here in the next couple days. He could have a new contract with the Brewers. He could have a new contract with somebody else. I could be mistaken here, but I believe a trade is for the most part off the table because he could just negotiate with any other team now. Like the Brewers don't have the rights to him. So all this and also the Brewers could have just added him, you know, before he opted out on Friday. That was an option. They chose to not do that, valuing, you know, the flexibility of those, that last roster spot, which I guess kind of also goes to show that I think they want Luke Voit, but if you read between the lines there, it's not a need Luke Voit. And I would guess that generally stems from the defensive, you know, lack of flexibility that he provides when he's taking up a bench spot.
Yeah, so here's what we're left with. We're left with essentially what looks like, on paper, and it may not be this simple, whether or not the Brewers are going to keep both Joey Weimer and Sal Frelick to start this year. With Tyler Naquin being told that they're not interested in bringing him to Milwaukee, you know, someone has to play right field. Garrett Mitchell's your center fielder. Jesse Winker, for the most part, is a DH. Brian Anderson can play out there. Christian Yelich is your left fielder. Your right fielder at this point, it's pretty much Sal Frelick or Joey Weimer. And now if Luke Voit is unavailable, like, you know, it's pretty easy to look at the Phillies situation, for example, with Rhys Hoskins being lost for the year, that might be something that Luke Voit would be interested in as a first baseman. If Voit's unavailable, well, maybe now it's both Frelick and Weimer, which is definitely not the direction I thought the Brewers would be going at the outset. It's not a conservative approach at all. It definitely cost them some depth in that guys like Hira, Naquin, and maybe Luke Voit now too would not be with the Brewers to start the year, and you would then not have their services over the course of the season. So I want to know just where your head is at with this, and if you think that is, if I'm oversimplifying it, or if it's just quite simply like Luke Voit, if he decides he wants to come back, he will, and then one of Frelick or Joey Weimer will go down to AAA, or he decides he doesn't want to come back and both of them make the roster. Is it more nuanced than that, do you think?
I think it's essentially boils down to that. There's a little more nuance in it in that the Brewers could externally add someone, but from within the clubhouse, yeah, that's pretty much it. Also, like if Luke Voit's not on the team, if he signs somewhere else, I wouldn't rule out Bryce Terang and maybe Abraham Toro as well from the picture. Like they would feasibly still have enough outfield coverage with Yelich, Mitchell, and Weimer, and then they got Owen Miller and Brian Anderson who can play out there. Winker as well, but he's I don't think they're going to use him much in right field. It would mostly be left field, the Yelich replacement on days where he sits or is DHing. So they have the outfield coverage if they want to go with Terang instead of Frelick. So that's another option as well. I really think we're going to find these things out quick. Some of this info might even be outdated very soon in the week. I mean, they break camp on Tuesday, so and we're recording Sunday night. So there's not a whole lot of time in there.
Well, and I guess I'd be curious, like, how big of a loss could Luke Voit be? I mean, he's had a very good spring. Like you said, defensive versatility, that's not what he's there for, but he is a right-handed hitter. And that is something the Brewers lack, which, and I'll talk about the differences between Weimer and Frelick in a second. The big one is where they bat on the side of, you know, side of home plate. But would it, like, should Brewers fans be concerned about Luke Voit? I mean, he's kind of a guy that wasn't in anyone's orbit until he was signed, you know, early in camp, and now looks like a guy who could be useful for them. But what, I guess, like, what is sort of the urgency level do you sense if he does go somewhere else? Are the Brewers going to regret it?
Oh, that's the million-dollar question, JR. Yes. He looks healthy. He's got a good track record in his career. His numbers the last 2 years, though, don't scream like, this is a guy you have to have. But 3 years ago, yeah, it screams, this is a guy you have to have. So it's interesting. I mean, realistically, there's not a ton of playing time for him on this team. Like, there's a way, even, you know, if he's not on the team, that they could cover against right-handed or left-handed starters, and they could cover pretty well. Involves Owen Miller and Mike Brasso and Joey Weimer all being the lineup, and maybe like William Contreras as DH as well. So it is possible. Like, at the end of the day, like, this is a guy who did sign a non-roster invite. There's been a lot of time spent talking about him. Trust me, we have asked so many questions about Luke Voit as well. He's been the most talked about player in this camp in terms of the media standpoint. So a lot of interest in the Luke Voit situation. But I mean, it is an interesting spectacle, I guess, or an interesting dynamic. Kind of, at first it was like the only drama in camp, but now we got some more.
Yeah. So let me revisit this. Frelick versus Weimer. You know, Frelick, I think, and we've talked about this before, we really thought, as well as he was playing in the minor leagues, he would be the guy to come up when Garrett Mitchell ended up being the guy who came up. And Garrett Mitchell's had a great spring, and looks like he's even taken a step forward, and, you know, might just be a really, really good major league center fielder. Like, that's kind of the optimism there. But, you know, Sal Frelick, the only knock against him, because we know he can play defense, we could probably even pass as a center fielder if you needed him in a pinch, the only knock against him is that he is a left-handed bat on a team that seems to be pretty, you know, has its left-handed bats. It needs right-handed power, and that's where Joey Weimer theoretically comes in. Joey Weimer has been in camp this whole time. I don't think either one of us would have expected at the beginning of camp that Joey Weimer would be a candidate to make the opening day roster at the end of the year, and yet here we are again, where, you know, maybe Sal Frelick, for as highly as we regard him as maybe the best of these three outfielders, might be the last to get to the big leagues. But then again, they could, again, keep both of them, or they could just straight up choose Sal Frelick over Joey Weimer, because Sal Frelick maybe has the higher ceiling, but Joey Weimer's been pretty solid, does have a little more experience than Frelick does. We know the Brewers value that based on how they chose Garrett Mitchell over Sal Frelick last year, and, you know, he's a right-handed bat. So, you know, I know you've gone back and forth on which guy, if they had to choose one, which guy would be the guy to come to Milwaukee for the start of the season. I don't know if you've settled on one that you really think you have an answer here, or if that's still up in the air, but give me your thoughts on that.
I have gone back and forth. I think in the end, though, you know, this is basically your regular right fielder right now. And Brian Anderson can play out there for sure. He has a really good arm, too. But your three, I guess, four outfielders, if you include Winker, would all be lefties if you go Frelick. So I don't know if it's as simple as that with Frelick or Weimer, but Weimer hits right-handed, and he has the extra 2-3 months of pro ball experience. I guess basically a whole year of big league or pro ball experience on Frelick from being drafted in 2020 instead of 2021. So coming into spring, I thought Joey Weimer probably had the most to, you know, most to work on in the minor leagues. But I mean, he's, I don't want to say he's looked great this spring. The performance hasn't been like off the charts or anything, but he certainly looks like he belongs this spring.
Yeah, that 2020 draft was a weird one. That was during the midst of the pandemic, where you had each team basically drafted five players, and Garrett Mitchell was number one. Freddie Zamora, who's had some injuries, was a promising guy, the second rounder. Xavier Warren has been pretty good for the Brewers. He's moved up the ranks. Joey Weimer is the fourth round pick. He could, again, be on the opening day roster. And then Hayden Cantrell. I don't remember which deal Hayden Cantrell was traded for someone, and I've heard him.
I want to say Caratini.
Okay.
I want to say Caratini.
That might be right. That might be right, because that would have been a high price to pay. But the Brewers were in a pinch last year when Pedro Severino was suspended just before the season. They needed a backup catcher, and it's paid off, because Victor Caratini was certainly served his role last year and is with the team again this year. That's pretty solid, I would say. So still some drama to come here with the next couple days. Couple days to go before the Brewers do indeed come back home to Milwaukee and get set for that opener against the Chicago Cubs. There are a couple other news items of note. Adrian Hauser leaving his last appearance with a groin injury. Definitely a red flag, I would say, in terms of whether or not he'll be available for the opening day, to make the opening day roster. It might. I don't. Blessing in disguise is probably too strong, because I'm sure they would love to have Adrian Hauser in the bullpen on opening day, but it might enable them to keep a little flexibility and keep one or both of Yoel Piamp and Gus Varland, the Rule 5 guy who has to stay on the roster all season long. He was drafted in the Rule 5 draft from the Dodgers and has been electric. He was good again as we record this on Sunday. It kind of feels like they have to give it a shot, but that is a heck of a commitment to keep somebody on the roster. Now they could have him on the opening day roster, and then, you know, May 1 rolls around and they just can't keep him, and that's that. You know, like they could at least roll the dice to start with. But he has really looked like somebody who needs to make this roster. And they have a couple moves they can make to open up some 40-man spots, I know. But I'm curious to know where the end of the bullpen is in your mind. These last couple spots, you know, is Varland definitely making the team? Is Piamp making the team? You know, let's say Adrian Hauser does go on the IL. I think that's probably where this goes. But give me your thoughts on the bullpen at this point.
Yeah, I can't quite get a read on what they're going to do with the last spot. But the thinking, right, as of right now, we don't know exactly the extent of Hauser's injury right now, but they've got one extra arm in camp right now. They got 14 healthy pitchers after optioning Tyson Miller, who looked really good, by the way, but they optioned him earlier Sunday. So there's one odd man out right now. Theoretically, that's Varland or Piamps or Bryce Wilson. I can't quite get the proper read. My intuition is to say Gus Varland has forced his way onto this team. Like, unless you can work out some sort of trade with the Dodgers for his rights. But at that point, that's going to, like, you just keep the guy instead of, you know, he's looked so good that you're going to have to give something legitimate back to the Dodgers. They're just not going to let you have him for free. So I think Gus Varland makes the team. The Hauser injury might answer all the questions. If they put him on the injured list, boom, you got 13 healthy pitchers in camp. Now, of course, there's always the option of adding an external arm as teams, you know, inform guys they aren't on the team. Guys just like Yoel Piamps, you know, if he gets DFA'd, to hit waivers, proven big league track record there. And so it's not too hard usually for those guys to get swept up and, you know, find a new spot. So there may still be some movement there, but Gus Varland, man, he's looked so good, so electric. I just don't see how you don't add him at this point.
Yeah, we've talked about the bullpen and how there's a lot of uncertainty there, and, you know, even Matt Bush, who has struggled in the spring, like, you don't really know what you have after Devin Williams, and somebody has to step up, somebody has to rise to the occasion. And maybe it's Gus Varland. You know, maybe it's this guy who wears number 74, who's a Rule 5 guy. You wrote about him, I know, earlier, and the pressure that comes with being a Rule 5 pick, having to make the roster. You know, it's complicated. If he goes back to the Dodgers, they haven't had him in camp. You know, where is his role on the new team? You know, for him personally, it's a complicated situation. So I'm sure he has an eye on making this team. And I mean, he's opened a lot of eyes. He definitely is someone who should be, in my mind, should at least start the year. Like, maybe it doesn't work out. Maybe they have to drop him midway through the year, and so be it. But to at least keep that option open, I got to think they need to give that a shot. Just big picture, where are we at? Where are you at with this team? Like, we are on the precipice now of the season. You've seen them in action. Do we optimistic, pessimistic? Where are you right now, Kurt?
Well, I mean, what kind of person is not at least somewhat optimistic when opening day is 3 days away? I guess maybe like the Oakland A's. Like, if I was an Oakland A's writer, maybe I wouldn't be super optimistic about them making the playoffs. But I feel like the inclination at this time of year is always to say, yeah, they could do it. And the path for them to do that is very clear. It lies in the five starters who are all healthy right now. And I've said it before, if these guys make the chunk of their starts, they will make the playoffs. I still think the offense should be fine, kind of like last year. It was fine. It could use, you know, another big bat for sure. But it's a little too late to address that now. So I think if I'm pegged to make a projection or a prediction, JR, I'm going to say 90 wins. I think 89 to 90 wins. It feels like a big jump from that 89 to that 90 number. So I don't know where I fall in on that one yet. So 89 or 90. Yeah. We'll go with that. And that should be enough to make the playoffs, right? I know there's like 7 or 8 teams in the National League this year that have a realistic shot at getting that. Maybe just 7 teams. So 90 wins in the playoffs. Sure.
Yeah, it feels like this could probably be pretty similar to last year where you've got, you know, 7 teams vying for 6 spots, and the Brewers were the odd team out last year, and you could see that happening again this year. I think it really, I think for them, you know, at least early, it's just best to look at the NL Central. Like, it's them and the Cardinals, and one of those teams is almost certainly going to be a playoff team. I don't think, you know, unless Chicago really truly surprises with the talent they've assembled, the old guys they've assembled, and maybe some of the young kids, you know, sprout up early, I don't think anybody in this division can keep pace. So it's just a matter of staying with those guys. You don't get the imbalanced schedule this year, where you get a ton of opportunities against that lower level competition, against the Reds, Pirates, and Cubs. So, with some of those options, some of that cut back a little bit. Now, I really think 87 wins could be good enough to win this division, and you might just see that that's the only playoff spot available to the winner of the National League Central to a National League Central team. So it's going to be just about keeping pace with the Cardinals, and you know, maybe along the way they find a bat, because they obviously cannot compete with St. Louis's offense, but their starting rotation is as good as anybody in the National League. So
certainly, yeah, I certainly have my own questions about the Brewers bullpen, many questions about it actually, but I have just as many questions about the Cardinals starting rotation, which is more important. You know, their offense is going to be legitimate, but I don't know. I just don't know how good the starters are going to be. Like, I don't look at that rotation, and if I'm the Brewers, that rotation does not intimidate me. I think Freddy Peralta would, you know, Freddy Peralta is the Brewers' number 3, and he'd be their best pitcher. So we'll see. We will see. It's teams that are built differently, but it should come down to those two.
Philly's bullpen last year was awful, just terrible for the vast majority of the year. But they had enough offense, they had just enough starting pitching, and then they got hot in the postseason. Obviously, you can't look at any one situation and say, anecdotally, that's something that could directly apply to the Brewers, very different teams. But still, it is possible to succeed while you're figuring out your bullpen, and then it's just a matter of a couple guys stepping up, I think. Kurt, before we move on, before I let you go, I wanted to preview what was to come here as we get closer to opening day. Again, that is Thursday. Todd Rosiak and myself will be there covering the action. Hopefully the weather cooperates a little bit, and we're not dying up there or getting rained out or anything like that. Shades of that 2008 season opener in Chicago with the driving rainstorm, Ben Sheets, Kosuke Fukudome's home run in the 9th inning to tie the game, and Brewers wound up winning that game. Just a wild start to a very wild season. But I know you've been working on something that's going to come at jsonline.com soon. You are not just digging into advanced stats. You are trying to build your own stat, and use it to sort of predict hitting. Try to find sort of that central singular stat that can kind of offer some predictive value in terms of evaluating hitters. So give me some background. Give me a tease as to what is coming from you, Kurt.
Well, first off, I was hoping you were going to say you're working on something, and I was going to be able to say my tan.
That's lame, Kurt. Don't do that to me.
No, you set me up well. The first thing is, like, I'm not trying to – I'm not good at math. There's a reason I went into journalism, but I like baseball stats, and I like them a lot. The thing that I don't like – well, I do like and I don't like about baseball is it's just so unpredictable. You have no idea what's going to happen. So any chance that we have to, you know, have a better idea of what might happen in the future, it takes away some from some of the mystique, maybe, but also just kind of gives us a better idea of of what could possibly happen. So the crux of what I set out to do this off season was figure out if there was a way I could come up with just one number. You know, you take a look at this one number, and it helps give you an idea if you think a guy's underlying skill matches his output. There's a lot that goes into it, but the thinking is that, you know, skill is stickier from year to year. It's easier to repeat things, you know, repeat success if you are skilled in the most important areas of hitting. So effectively what I've come up with is one number, that has a bunch of different components of skill that go into it and a bunch of tests that I ran to try to get the best, you know, best formula that I could. And it's one number. It's I call it Hobbs, after Roy Hobbs.
Yes.
And yes,
we had a good one, Bobby.
Great movie, The Natural. It also technically there's an acronym in there, Hoag's Baseball Stat, but that's it. I just want to call it after Roy Hobbs. Let's be honest here. So it's one number, and the idea being, it sort of tells you, you know, compare how the guy performed in his actual output-based stats, you know, like your WRC plus or your OPS or your weighted on base average, you know, things like that, that publicly available info that people look at to determine how a guy did. And this stat kind of, in theory, can give you a good depiction of if that guy's underlying skill matched his output. And if the stats, you know, if Hobbs says, you know, maybe he outperformed a little bit of the underlying skill, then you could expect some regression. So there's a whole thing going on JS Online about it Monday. And it's very nerdy, but it's kind of cool. It is kind of cool. It's super beta testing. I guess it's not beta enough where I can publish it. But that's me doing math.
I like it. I'm looking forward to it, Kurt. We'll be reading up on that, and I know there are people like me who are pretty into this advanced stats stuff. So always open-minded to maybe something new, and so you could look for that this week. I was looking for the Hayden Cantrell stuff, and so Caratini. When the Brewers traded for Caratini, they also traded for Alex Jackson at the same time from the Marlins. That's the guy who was exchanged for infielder Hayden Cantrell, who has since been traded to the Giants.
Okay, that's right. That's right. They did the two trades in the same day.
That's right. That's right. Alex Jackson, who is still with the Brewers, actually. But Cantrell and Alexis Ramirez were the two minor leaguers who went to Miami for that. Again, that was sort of a panicky situation where they had to start bolstering their catching depth pretty quickly. Be interesting to see, speaking of catching depth, where Peyton Henry ends up this year. Former Brewers prospect who was traded and has since come back. He is, I'm assuming, going to be a AAA this year. And I could see him being called upon if the Brewers are in a pinch, if somebody gets hurt. I'd be curious to know where if he's able to make any sort of impact this year, kind of a under-the-radar guy. But I think that's it, Kurt. I think the next time we chat, it might be in person. It might be... Or I don't know, maybe you'll be already on the road. I haven't memorized the schedule beyond these first two series where the Brewers open up with the Cubs and then start at home with the Mets on April 3rd. So, but I assume by this time next week, we'll have at least one series in the rearview mirror and we can chat about it. Pretty exciting stuff. Any last thoughts before we part ways for the preseason?
I think we're good. I think we're good. I got it all out.
Let's do it. Let's do the 2023 Major League Baseball season. Again, read everything Kurt Hoag has at jsonline.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Kurt Hoag. That's C-Y-R-T. That's not how he spells his actual name, but C-Y-R-T-H-O-G-G. And you can find me as well on Twitter at JR Radcliffe. Let us know what you think. We're going to lose our blue check marks soon, Kurt. Just in time for the start of the season. I think we lose our magic blue check marks. At least that's the word on the street. So we might be a little harder to find.
Oh, darn.
We might be a little harder to find. Our takes will be just as saucy and spicy as they were before. But that's what's coming up. And we will chat with you again next week, every week going forward on the Microbrew Podcast, Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, Milwaukee Brewers official podcast. Thank you for tuning in. We'll chat with you again next week. Bye-bye.